Welcome to the U.S. History Podcast. My name is Abby Rodriguez with another episode of U.S. History. Today, we will be talking about the Vietnam War. We have a very special guest, Frank FX Pastor. Thank you, Frank, for joining us today. Okay, so my first question, what's your name and birthday?
Okay, my name is Frank X for Xavier. They call me FX, for short, FX. Pastore, P as in Peter, A-S-T-O-R-E. I'm 78 years old.
78?
79, I'm sorry. Just had a birthday.
And your birthday?
Birth date is April 23rd, 1940.
April 23rd, 1930? 40. My bad. Okay. First question.
Were you drafted or did you enlist? No, I enlisted. Yes, I enlisted. I entered.
So, where were you living at the time?
I was living in Bronx, New York.
Why did you join?
Well, okay. What came about is after high school, I joined the Naval Reserve, okay? And I was given an option to go for 2 years active, but I had an obligation of 7 years for the Navy, for the Naval Reserve. After my commitment of the 2 years was up, I was asked, would you like to, what they term, ship over? So I said, oh, yes. Can I be in the same ship? No, you'd be transferred to another ship. I loved the ship that I was in. So I said, well, look, let me see what I, I'll go, for the remainder of the 5 years with the Naval Reserve. And I was so mad that I said, I'm going to join the Army. I joined the Army in 1959. Now, here comes the comical thing. When I went to the recruiter, they said, were you prior service? So I said, yeah, I was in the Naval Reserve. What did you do in the Naval Reserve? I was electrician's mate, electrician. We have a good job for you, right? We're going to send you to a place. And I said, well, where? I thought in the United States. He said, we're going to send you to a place called Vietnam. So I said, what part of Japan is Vietnam? They said, no, Vietnam is Vietnam. So I stayed in Vietnam for one tour, which was about a year and 6 months. And, I worked as a combat engineer. I was a combat engineer. So what we did was we looked for obstructions and tunnels, and we would blow them up. I came back to the United States, and I applied for an additional tour in Vietnam. And what had happened was the second tour was a little more serious. It was getting more and more of a fighting. But I stayed as a combat engineer. And what had happened was, one day, I was in Vietnam for maybe 9 months. And this lieutenant said, okay, engineers up. I moved out and I went from tree to tree, all of a sudden I saw something in the sky, up in the air, and it was a grenade. It landed somewhere behind me, and the gust of explosion picked me up and pushed me forward. And I don't know whether I hit a tree or the tree hit me. It opened up the back of my head, okay? And the I was unconscious. When you get hit in the head, you bleed more than anything else, any part of your body. And this medic, you know, I came to, and I found myself on a helicopter, and my whole head was wrapped up in a big bandage. And I kept on touching it because I thought I lost my head, part of my head. Okay? And this medic said, "Keep your hands down, buddy. You're doing okay." Okay. And I did it again. I touched my head. And he said, "No, put your hands down." When I put my hand down, I touched the pinky of somebody else. It was ice cold. I was on the deck of the helicopter, and it was very, very cold, and it was blazing sun, but this individual was cold, okay? And I never asked if he was alive. Now, I had a partner on the machine gun. We had a machine gun post on the other side of the camp, and he came from Tennessee. He had a very thick accent, and he would see a farmer, and he would go, "Hey, you," right? "Hey, you," until the farmer turned around. He said, "Your feet smell and you don't love Jesus." He kept us up, okay? The farmer couldn't speak English. He would point to his head, and the only thing he could say is "dingy American," meaning crazy Americans. I said, "One day we're going to get hit." We never, never got hit. And I was sent from my unit to Japan because I broke up my head. That's when, you know, they threw this grenade. And we discovered we weren't only fighting the Vietnamese or the North Vietnamese. We were fighting every country that disliked the United States. The weapons, the ammunition, and everything else. Now, maybe about a year or two later, I got in touch with someone from my unit, and they said, "You know what we found in a uniform? A piece of metal from the grenade that blew me to the other side of the island came from Hungary." So we were fighting other countries. And I'm saying, well, you know, we're not fighting the Vietnamese. We're fighting every country that disliked us. So I would want you to put that down, okay? And we wanted to control communism. Now, what you were told in school, okay, look, our country has its faults. We try to correct these faults. Now, again, I'm 79 years old. I could verse that, you know? When I was possibly 19 or 20 or so, you know, I said, "Well, what the hell is going on? We're fighting countries that dislike us. You know, we shouldn't be doing this, or we shouldn't, you know, we should put a stop to this." So communism was something that was controlling their people. Okay? Their politicians made decisions, and this is what we were under the, not the impression, but this is how our government was trying to fight them, okay? Right or wrong, this is my country, okay? So, you know, I saw us, we had to be there. We had to be there. Where we are today, well, look what's happening today. We're fighting ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and things like that. But Vietnam was the start of these incidences, okay? Okay, if there's any other questions you'd like to ask me, you know, I get keyed up on one subject and then we lose, you know.
What did it feel like to be in the war?
Say again, please.
What was it like to feel like in the war? How did
the
you feel?
The weather?
The war. How was it like? How did you feel when you were in the war?
I was scared. I was very, very scared. I thought I would never, never come out of this. There was a lot of yelling. Now, this is something people do not know. The actual combat is no more than 3 minutes. You go into a combat situation, it's no more than 3 minutes. A lot of yelling, a lot of people, you know, falling or getting wounded. And what the combat engineers were used by, if we didn't blow up anything, we had to help the medics carry the dead and the wounded back to the landing spot where they could be picked up. So that was my job, blow up tunnels and get rid of obstacles. And then after that 3 minutes, no more, we would actually pick up the dead and the wounded. Something always bothered me, and this happened maybe about 10 years ago. I had a dream of a kid yelling, "Ma, Ma," or "Mommy, Mommy." And I woke up, and my wife said, "What's the matter?" I says, "You know, I'm having this dream over and over again." And a young kid yelling for his mother. He wouldn't call for his father, you know, his dog or whatever, right? He would, just before he died, he would call Ma, and that stayed with me. This is about 20 years after, you know, I was in the military until just recently, but I would hear this young kid call for his mother, and that bothered me. I would wake up, my wife said, "Look, FX, you have to go and see the psychiatrist at the VA. Well, the psychiatrist said, "Forget about it." I said, "I'm having a dream, and how the hell do I forget? I don't hear that dream anymore. It's over." I says, "Well, you made the soul of this boy, just before he dies, he calls for his mother." And I said, "May his soul rest in peace." So go on with your question.
Tell me about your boot camp or training experiences.
Say again?
Tell me about your boot camp.
Oh, boot camp was something that I wasn't prepared for. I was in the Naval Reserve, and boot camp in the Navy is far different from the Army. When I went into the Army, boot camp was more, you know, touch. You know, we would move, and people would throw machine guns, throw grenades and machine guns. This is live ammunition, and we had to keep our butts down under the barbed wire. So It was a serious thing. And when we graduated from boot camp, the sergeant that taught us everything that we could possibly, he cried because he knew we were going in to Vietnam. So he cried. And that was my experience in boot camp. Basic training. That's what it was called, basic training. So it was live ammunition, a lot of marching, a lot of, you know, get your act together, fix your equipment, be it inspected. If you failed inspection, you would fail, you would not go to Liberty, you would not go, you know, to get a pass. So we did 8 months in basic training, and then an additional 8 months with combat engineers. So I did two things, a total of, you know, 8 and 8.
Do you remember your instructors?
He came from Poland, and he had a very thick accent. By name, I've forgotten most of their names. Okay? I've forgotten most of their names. But he was a very serious boot camp instructor, the United States Army, but he came from Poland, and his accent was very thick. Sometimes you couldn't understand his commands, and he would kick us in the butt to start paying attention.
Which wars did you serve in?
Which war?
Yes.
Okay, the Vietnam War. And then after Vietnam, there was like a peace gap, and we were getting deployed to Iraq, Afghanistan, and if you consider that a war, I was getting promoted more and more, and I was in charge of, you know, men. So of course, you know, it's Vietnam, Afghanistan, and Iraq.
Where exactly did you go?
Well, when I was in Vietnam, we were sent right to the water. Let me think of the name. Kung Song. It had a funny name. I can't think of the name now. They would name a lot of their towns after heroes in Vietnam, and Kun Mang was the place. The first, it was right located near the water, and then we were shipped out in towards the hill country. Can't think of that name now. Kung Mang was the first one, and then, you know, if I was to look on a map, the map of Vietnam has changed, mm-hmm. Okay? It's not, the names that we had when we were there, okay? Like Saigon is now Ho Chi Minh City, okay? So if you use Saigon, it was the central location. It was like the Fifth Avenue of Vietnam. Now it's called Ho Chi Minh City. So you got two names there. You know, so if you like, you could put that down. The Communist Party changed the names from Saigon to Ho Chi Minh City. Ho Chi Minh was a dictator of Vietnam, and in during the Second World War, he helped us fight the Japanese, and then all of a sudden, he became communist.
What was your job or assignment?
I was a combat engineer. Combat engineers are people that carry high explosives. And what we would do, we would destroy obstacles or the entrances to tunnels. We would get a small guy in the unit. He was usually called a tunnel rat. He was a very thin man. He would go in with explosives, and maybe he would go in maybe 3/4 of a mile and blow up the tunnel. These tunnels went for miles, miles. There were hospitals. If the North Vietnamese ran away, they would go into these tunnels that we had to look for, and the tunnel would lead, you know, for miles. So we had to destroy these things. That was my job. Right when we would go in to a patrol, on a patrol, the combat engineers would help the medics gather the injured, gather the dead in the field. Like I was telling you about the Soldier's Cross, mm-hmm. We never left anyone behind. So that's what combat engineers did.
Were you a prisoner of war?
Only in training. I was held for 8 hours in training when I was in the 101st Airborne Division. We were beat to a pulp, put into a cabinet filled with rocks. We had to kneel down in there, but only in training. Was not captured.
How did he stay in touch with your family?
U.S. mail. Sometimes we got a chance to get to a telephone. He had these were communication units, 101st communication unit, and they had telephones, and we would make a call to the New York or the United States. It was only maybe about 6 minutes, so it had to be fast.
What was the food like?
The food was okay. I mean, we, with the combat engineers, I ate more dirt and dust than food. These were mess kits. They were sectioned things, and the mess kit was folded in half. There was a ring. The ring would come off, and it would be the handle, and that was in a section also. So He had a mess kit. That's what it was called. The food was good. You know, sometimes we got a cook that was exceptional. He was good. And sometimes we had cooks that, well, the dirt and dust tastes better than the meal.
Did you have plenty of supplies?
Yes, we did. We were given a lot of supplies back at the camp, and the helicopters would lift more supplies to the area that you were at. Like, we couldn't carry all this, so we would, you know, go out on patrol with a helicopter, and when we would get off the helicopter, we had so much that we could carry, you know, high explosives. And then there would be a man with a Prick 77. It was like, it would make communications to another unit that had a radio. And that thing was used to get more helicopters to take the wounded and the dead away, or bring in more supplies.
Do you have any photographies?
My wife has a lot of, like, my medals, you know, and my wife has a lot of snapshots of what I did over in Vietnam and in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Did you keep a personal diary?
In the beginning, I did. But, you know, that was dangerous if it was ever found. Okay? It had my girlfriend, my mother, my, you know, my relatives in the book. And I did keep it, you know, maybe about less than a year.
Almost done. Did you receive, what do you recall the day of your service ended?
The day the service ended, okay. Now, you may find this a little insulting. At the time I was discharged from the Army, Bill Clinton was the President of the United States. And I was given, you know, thank you for your service, and so much, my wife has that too. And the commanding officer that gave me this, he said, do me a favor, do not tear up this thing. I'm not a Bill Clinton lover. So I said, you would have to be the President of the United States. Please, do not rip up that separation or the thing, thank you for your service. You know, his wife even signed it. Hillary Clinton. I'm saying, well, why her? So that was, let's see, In 1991, I was separated from the military. I joined, well, the Naval Reserve and the Army in 1958. And I went that long until 2001.
Where were you?
Okay. Well, I was in Vietnam, or actually on a ship. We sailed on the north part of the United States. And after I was out of the Navy, I was sent to Japan, where I joined my unit, and then to Korea, where my unit was stationed. From Korea, we went to Vietnam.
Did you work or go back to school?
Just briefly. I don't have, let's say, finished college, but I did go to a civilian school, and if I spent perhaps a year and a half, I was more serious than getting a job. I was in the Army Reserve. Well, in order to keep a job, I had to be an Army technician in a warehouse in the United States Army. So you had to belong to a reserve unit. So it was continuous military until I retired altogether.
Was your education supported by the GI Bill?
At the college level, yes, by the GI Bill.
Did you make any close friendships while in the service?
Yes. I remember a lot of fellas that, you know, I have to look at their pictures in order to come up with their names. But I had a lot of friends that I lost in Vietnam. Then as I started to get rank, I couldn't keep too many friends. I was too much of a boss. So, but in Vietnam, yes, there were a lot of friends.
What did you go on to do as a career after college?
I stayed in the military while I was going to college, okay? And of course, with the National Guard, you became a civilian more than anything else. But I had to have a military job and a unit so I could keep the job in the warehouse where I worked.
How did your service and experience affect your life?
Well, it became very regimented. Things had to be done so that you were able to, let's say, if you gave a command, you knew that the job was going to get done. So my career developed into a business. You had to understand that all of this had to be done according to, you know, a command or, you know, seriousness. Sometimes I affect the people here too. Where I live.
Did you attend any reunions?
Reunions? In the very beginning, when I was promoted, I would go back to my old unit, and they would say, "Wow, you made that much rank?" And so a lot of the commanders became generals, and we had a good time at the reunions. Old friends that I hadn't met in a long time. A lot of friends that have died, you know, due to age and things like that.
Did your military experiences influence your thinking about war or about military in general?
My war experience, yes. It did affect what we are doing today. We're sending out young men, and I don't believe they have an idea of what, you know, we're doing. I mean, there's no stopping until, excuse me, just... Anyway, I am asking, let's say the TV, I said, you know, you're sending these young men and we're leaving their body parts all over the world. What is the thing? What is the reason behind this? We would like to know. Oh, I would like to know. And, you know, could I possibly, you know, add to that?
All right.
Has it affected me? Yes.
If it mentions organizations, what kind of activities does your post or accusations have?
Oh, okay, you're going to have to lead me through this, please.
Okay. Or do you want to, I could ask a different question. Is there anything you would like to add that we have not covered in this interview?
Well, yeah, okay. I would like to know what they're being, not taught, but what you are leading to believe that our country is, you know, a friendly, forgiving country. Let's say during the early 60s, we had segregation, and now we have a multi thing, and we're here to support each other, regardless of our color. This is my belief. It's not a separation of a color anymore. It used to be, but no more. We have to be united. We have to be strong against things that want to destroy us as Americans.
That is...